Welcome to the world of 2,000 years ago. For that's the historical setting as we turn our thoughts backward in time to the night Jesus was born. Consider the heavens as they were then, and seek among those stars one that might have been a natural star of Bethlehem. No one knows, of course, precisely when Jesus was born. The Bible doesn't give us the date. The historians of the time let it pass without notice, until a century or two later, and then they disagreed drastically. Today, when we try to establish that date as best we can, we find ourselves enmeshed in a net of historical confusion. It is confusion compounded by the fact that a different calendar was in use in those days, different from the one we use in many respects. Most important was the fact that the passage of years was counted from the legendary date of the founding of the city of Rome. That date is usually accepted as 753 BC, although there is no complete agreement even on this. Persons living in that time would have thought of the then current year as, for example, 750 AUC, the initials standing for the Latin phrase ad urba condita, year of the city. It was not until the year 533 AD, Anno Domini, the year of the Lord, as we reckon time, that Dionysius Exiguus, then the abbot of Rome, first suggested counting the years from the date of Jesus' birth. To fix that date, Dionysius referred to the second century historian and religious philosopher, Clement of Alexandria. Clement himself set the date of the birth in November of 3 BC, but Dionysius adopted instead a statement in his writings that it occurred during the 28th year of the reign of the Roman Emperor Augustus, a date which Clement attributed to other historians. Augustus became emperor in the year 726 of the city. Dionysius simply added 28 years to that and concluded that the year of the birth was 754. And ever since then, we've been counting the passage of the years as though that were so. But if there's one thing we are certain of, it is this simple fact. Jesus was not born the number of years ago indicated by the calendar on Christmas Day. Nor, indeed, is it likely he was born on Christmas. Dionysius is less than reliable. We do not know, for instance, that the birth did occur during the 28th year of Augustus, as Dionysius assumed. Clement, his prime authority, certainly doubted that date, and if it were correct, there would still be uncertainty. Augustus was not always known by that name. It was as Octavian that in 42 BC, he defeated Brutus and Cassius at the Battle of Philippi, and as Octavian, 11 years later, that he scattered the fleets of Antony and Cleopatra at the Battle of Actium and became the undisputed leader of the Roman legions. It was not until 4 years afterward, however, that the Roman Senate proclaimed him as Augustus. Which period of his reign did those ancient historians employ when they referred to the date of Jesus' birth? Was it his rule as Augustus, or, as would seem more likely, the total span of his leadership? There is no positive answer. Nor can we assume the birth occurred in the 28th year by either reckoning. And so, to determine this date, so important to the Christian world, we must unravel the skeins of an historical detective story. We find the chief clues in the Bible. The first in the book of Matthew, where we're told that Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king. Obviously, if we knew when Herod died, we would know the latest possible year for the birth of the Christ child. The first century Jewish historian Josephus records that Herod died shortly after a partial eclipse of the moon that was seen at Jericho, and shortly before the Jewish feast of the Passover. There was just such a partial eclipse seen at Jericho on May 13th in the year 4 BC. And in that year, the Passover, as determined by the motions of the moon, began on April 12th. Thus, we cannot be more than a few days away from the truth if we conclude that Herod died about April 1st in the year 4 BC, a generally accepted date, and that Jesus was born sometime before that. How long before? Again, we find a clue in the Bible. This time, it is in the book of Luke, where we read that the reason that Joseph and Mary returned to Bethlehem, where they found the town so crowded there was no room for them at the inn, was because of an edict that had gone out from that same Caesar Augustus, decreeing that all the world should be taxed, and all went to be taxed, each to his own city. Considerable confusion surrounds the dating of this passage, and until recently it was of little help. But in 1923, archaeologists working near Ankara, Turkey, came upon a Roman temple inscription that recorded the major dates of taxation under Augustus. There were only three, and of these, only one could possibly apply to our problem. The year was 8 BC. Jesus, then, was born between the years of 8 and 4 BC. Transportation and communication in those days were slow, a matter of travel by foot and by horse and camelback. It would have taken time for an edict to have gone out from Rome, to have reached Palestine on the outer fringes of the empire, and to have been acted upon by such humble people as Joseph and Mary. Time on the order of 1 and possibly 2 years. That would indicate the year of the birth was 7 or 6 BC. The birth and the appearance of the star described in Matthew were not, of course, necessarily simultaneous. Clearly, from the biblical account, the wise men saw the star, then consumed an unknown amount of time traveling to Bethlehem, where they found Jesus, an infant, wrapped in swaddling clothes. After they visited Herod, told him of the birth, and failed to return, the king ordered the slaughter of all the children, from 2 years old and younger, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. That would indicate the star they had seen was in the heavens about 2 years before their visit, although Jesus was an infant when they arrived. We are told the wise men saw Herod, then a sick man, near the end of his reign, perhaps late in 5 BC or very early in 4 BC, since there was time before the king's death for Joseph to flee to Egypt with his little family. If we backtrack 2 years from those dates, we come to the years 7 or 6 BC for the appearance of the star. And those years are as close as we can come. 7 or 6 BC for the star seen by the wise men and for the birth of Jesus, which may well have occurred sometime after the star appeared. As to the time of the year, it almost certainly was not December 25th. We can take the word of the Bible for that, because in Luke we are told that shepherds were keeping watch over their flocks by night. There is only one time when shepherds normally spend the night in the fields, and that is when lambs are being born, in the spring. It was most likely in the spring of 7 or 6 BC, then, that Jesus was born. And if this is so, it leads us to wonder why we celebrate the Nativity in December. We do not know the answer, but there is an interesting speculation based upon some facts that we do know. In the early days of Christianity, it was a dangerous thing to be identified as a Christian. It invited persecution and even death. One did not, under such circumstances, go about openly announcing one's conversion to the new faith. We know, too, that early Christians celebrated the Nativity at various times of the year, many of them in January. And we know that in that era, there was a great pagan festival known as the Saturnalia. It was a lengthy feast of merrymaking, marked, significantly, by the custom of exchanging gifts. It was held to commemorate the winter solstice, the longest night in the year for the Northern Hemisphere. After the solstice, the days begin to grow longer. The warmth of the sun returns with its promise of spring. And this promise was great cause for rejoicing. Festivals relating to the solstice were common among peoples of the Northern Hemisphere long before the birth of Christ. The solstice occurs in our time on December 21st or 22nd. But in the years to which we have turned our thoughts, it occurred on December 25th. Those are the facts. The speculation is that many early Christians took to observing the birth of Jesus during the festival of the Saturnalia, hoping that their own quiet observances would thus go unnoticed. If many did this, then it would seem reasonable that by the time the Emperor Constantine made it possible to practice Christianity openly, some three centuries later, a tradition would have been established. The celebration of the Nativity at the time of the solstice would already have been a practice observed for many generations. That may be why we celebrate Christmas on the 25th of December, a date that was not established officially until 340 AD. But this is merely speculation. We cannot be sure. We can be reasonably certain that if we are to seek a natural phenomenon that might have given rise to the story of the Christmas star, we must turn our minds backward to the years 7 and 6 BC. For it is in those skies that the wondrous star about which we read in Matthew must have appeared. They were, in many respects, familiar skies. The constellations, the patterns that the stars form in the heavens, were the same then as now. For the stars of the night sky are suns, as our sun is a star. Those of night are so distant that, though they move through space at speeds measured in miles per second, and though most are traveling helter-skelter in different directions, their motions are not apparent to the human eye, even over a span of 2,000 years. The stars, then, appear to occupy fixed positions. But 2,000 years ago, as now, seven celestial objects appeared to have the power to wander at will among the stars. They are the sun, which appears to describe a full circle in the heavens in the course of a year, because the earth moves around it, the moon, which circles the earth once each month, and the five naked eye planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, which revolve around the sun. Each of these objects appears to wander in the heavens at its own speed and in its own track, although they all follow the broad path in the sky marked by the zodiac. It is obvious that since they are constantly moving at different speeds, the position of all seven objects at any particular time is peculiar to that particular moment. So it is that when we begin our search for a natural star of Bethlehem, we begin with the positions of the sun, moon, and planets for January of 7 BC. For it was sometime after that the birth of Jesus took place. We should note, as we begin, that the ideas we are about to consider are not of recent origin, but rather ones which have been advanced through the centuries by scientists and clergymen, historians and biblical scholars, all as eager as we to know whether there might have been a natural origin for the star described in Matthew. Possibly the first idea advanced was that the Christmas star might have been a meteor, a shooting star or falling star, as it is commonly called. The average sporadic meteor seen in the night skies is a small particle of nickel, stone, or iron, probably no larger than a grain of sand. Literally billions of these particles drift in the space between the planets, and millions of them strike the Earth's atmosphere every 24 hours. They arrive at speeds that range between 7 and 45 miles per second, speeds so great that, as everyone is aware in this age of space, friction with the atmosphere must raise them to white heat. They're consumed miles above the surface of the Earth, the average meteor appearing at an altitude of about 60 miles and disappearing about a second later at perhaps 40 miles. It is not the average meteor, however, that is under consideration as a possible Christmas star. Occasionally, a larger one arrives, and it needn't be very big to be spectacular. A meteoroid the size of a walnut would blaze across the heavens with a brilliance rivaling that of the moon. Such an object is known as a bolide, and if it should explode in flight, as sometimes happens because of rapid, unequal heating of objects that were, in space, deathly cold, it is designated as a fireball. Could something like that, a brilliant exploding meteor, have been the star of Bethlehem? It hardly seems likely. For one thing, a fireball or bolide is not a rare object, nor does a meteor, a transitory phenomenon indeed, fit the description of the star as given in the Bible. If it was not a shooting star, then, could it have been an exploding star that we seek? There are such things, stars always considerably more massive than our sun, which suddenly burst. They send their hot surface gases hurtling off into space in all directions, and they can be, for a while, the most spectacular objects in the sky. Before the explosion, the chances are that such a star would have been too distant and therefore too faint to be seen with the unaided eye. At the height of its outburst, it may shine with a brilliance 50,000 times greater than normal. It suddenly appears in the sky where no star was visible before, and as a result, it is known as a nova, or new star. Temporary star would be a better name, however, for it soon fades and passes from visibility. As amazing as such an outburst is, it is minor compared to the type of explosion known as a supernova. In the nova, only the outer layers of the star's material are involved, and when the explosion has subsided, the star appears little the worse for wear. We have observed stars that have gone through such contortions more than once. But there is no second time for a supernova. In this case, the greater part of the star's mass is converted instantly into radiant energy. The bursting star may shine as brilliantly as 100 million normal stars. And when it is over, nothing remains except the intensely hot, newly revealed core of the star and an expanding cloud of gaseous debris. Could such a supernova, or even a nova, have been the star of Bethlehem? There are some who think so, although until recently, it was believed that there was no record of a nova about the time of the birth of Jesus. There was another objection, too, in the fact that a nova would have been visible to everyone on the night side of the earth, while the Christmas star was not seen by everyone. Nevertheless, in 1958, a Chinese scholar, going back over ancient records, came upon an account of a guest star that was visible in the constellation of Aquarius in the springtime morning skies of 5 BC. There is a possibility, then, if our dates for the birth are somewhat in error, that such an object might have been the biblical star. But the object in 5 BC was not, apparently, a bright one. And there's the further objection that it was also described as a sweeping star, a phrase often applied to comets. And one, of course, which leads to the question of whether the Star of Bethlehem may have indeed been a comet.